Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. I would like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter, and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Arkansas, as a public service presentation. We'd also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I'd gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the family is the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the nation. Harold?
Hello, everybody. Hello, Joseph. Thank you for that nice introduction. We're not selling anything here, folks. This is a public service that we're offering, although there are lots of things we could sell. I think Joseph has a room available in his house.
No, not yet. Soon, I hope.
We are dedicated to giving back in the organization that has actually saved our lives, Alcoholics Anonymous. I've also been a member and group leader at Narcotics Anonymous, NA. They use the same steps, except step one says we admitted we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable, and the rest of the steps are identical. I've also been a member and have earned a seat in a group called Al-Anon, and that is for the family members of people with drug and alcohol problems, drinking problems. And the family members use the same steps, a plan for living, except step one for them says, we admitted we were powerless over others, that our lives had become unmanageable. We're addicted to having everyone's approval. That's the definition of codependency. So these steps and the people in the 12-step groups and the organization itself, the steps, the traditions, the principles are really amazing. And so we're here to emphasize the part of this that is really key. Oh, by the way, Joseph, I showed the movie My Name is Bill W. to some of my friends in recovery, and it really focuses on the fact that the only thing that really works is intensive work with another alcoholic. And that's what Bill W. found in Dr. Bob, and the two of them then went and worked with people in the hospitals, and off they went, or on they went in recovery in 1935. And the people that have benefited, people by the millions have benefited from this work. And the word sponsor doesn't really appear in the book. It says intensive work with another alcoholic, and that's what a sponsor is. So Joseph has, everybody, I just wanted you to know that Joseph has devoted a lot of energy and a lot of money to the idea that we can learn more from each other about intensive work with another alcoholic and about how to find a sponsor, how to find sponsees, and how all of this works. And so he's put it together on his website called rumradio.org. And I know hundreds of you are listening to these programs now during the week all over the world. It's really amazing to me, and we want to make this as useful as it can possibly be. My goal is to be more useful to God every day. So we don't charge for this. This is a free service. Please let us know if it's valuable to you. Go to the website right now, and you can read along with what we're presenting, which is the step 12 under the column 12 and 24, Dr. Bob times 5,000. He sponsored over 5,000 people, and we're here to help understand how he did that and encourage you to do the same or to strive for the same. It has saved my life, and that's what I'm doing here, trying to give back a little bit. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Now, we don't expect you to sponsor 5,000 people. 4,999 will suffice. Only kidding. Pardon me?
I've got some hot coffee here. I'm going to take a sip.
Okay. Tonight, before we get started, I always like to read the third step prayer. I give that as my basic assignment, one of the first assignments to my new sponsees. And I have them call someone on their newcomers, on their beginner's packet. Usually some clubs have or groups have beginner's packets, and they send around a little packet with some initial information to help the newcomer. And people sign, men sign their name and phone number, women sign for the women. We like to keep it gender proper, and later on we'll explain that that's a more appropriate way of getting through the steps. It's a very intimate process of working the 12 steps with a sponsor, and it can be easily misconstrued and become romantically involved because of the intimacy. There's always a possibility of being inappropriate, so we keep men to men, women to women. In the gay community, they usually do that too. Gay men usually work with gay women as sponsors. Not always. If you can't find the same gender, we work the steps. You put whatever effort into trying to do it that way. We find it to be the most productive. But the key to this thing is to actually to work the steps. So if there's only a woman that you could find that'll willing to sponsor you, or she finds you and what have you, you know, try to be prayerful with it. I give you some tips how to handle these situations, and you start working the steps. That's the key to this thing, and this is why we do the rumradio.org. So this is the third step prayer, and the reason I have them do that, it connects them up with their fellowship. They're calling every day. They're asking for the next 30 days a different person every day if they can recite the third step prayer, get some used to picking up the 500-pound telephone, asking for help. Most people don't like to ask for help. We're very self-sufficient in our own mind. That's pride. Also, it might be a situation where the person he's calling might be thinking of taking that first drink of alcohol, and chances are he won't once he hears the prayer coming from someone else. It reinvigorates his own program. And the third step prayer is a surrender prayer. It's what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And here we go. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may be thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen. Amen. Oh, and you know what I did the other day? I found the rest of the Serenity Prayer. Are you familiar with that, Joseph?
I've seen it, yes. But if you want to say it, feel free.
Could I read it? All right.
Yes.
So, folks, I keep this prayer. Well, this prayer, the first paragraph appears on the back of our tokens, the tokens that we use in Alcoholics Anonymous to mark milestones of recovery. And so I've been around 24 years, and one side of my coin has the number 24 in Roman numerals, and the other side has this prayer, the serenity prayer, but just the first paragraph. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And the prayer goes on, living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardships as the pathway to peace, taking, as he did, this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that he will make all things right if I surrender to his will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him forever in the next. Amen.
Amen. Can you hear me, Harold?
Yes, I really like that.
Well,
go ahead, Joseph.
You got to remember that the original AA was a offshoot of the Oxford Group, which was a Christian fellowship. So
I understand it was a Christian fellowship of the very wealthy in the community.
Doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs. And
yes.
The problem with the anonymity that comes, you know, anonymous on press, radio, and films, and part of that was because they did have billboards, they were magazines, they did the press, radio, and films initially, and what they were afraid of was that there would be too many people coming in. And by doing that, too many people would get to see who's in there, ruining their, taking away their anonymity. So that's why they turned it into press, radio, and films. They didn't want that many people coming in. You got to remember, these people were doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs. These were pillars of the community, and the onus of being an alcoholic was too much. They might have been the town drunk in a city of millions, but to let people know that they were in recovery was more than they could bear.
Yes.
So we've come a long way. I think not always to the best advantage, and that's why we've done Rum Radio. I believe the back to basics approach is the most productive and the most useful. And I think we've strayed away for that, and that's what we're trying to accomplish. Tonight we're going to do the 12 and 24, Dr. Bob times 5,000. This is Michael M's posts. He's taken men through the steps in 24 hours using the Big Book and the Big Book alone. I believe the Big Book is a great work. It's a spiritual examination. The last sentence on page 164 and the first 164 pages of the book is the solution to our problem. The rest of it is stories and understandings. But the last sentence on the last page says, this book is only meant to be suggestive. We know so very little. More shall be revealed to both you and to us. I think a lot of folks miss that point, is that we're open-minded. If you come up with a better way to skin that cat, sign me up. But we found today that the information in the Big Book helps specifically for this ailment of alcoholism and drug addiction. But there's always going to be little new understandings. There's more, what's that? There's more written in your books than is made available to you. So the title, Step 12, when we're in the service of others, are we not in the service of our God? Step 12, the principle is service. We're going to talk about service. The step says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So the principle of the 12th step is service. I'll repeat that again. When we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? We're learning to be of service now. Life is confusing. We don't get a lot of answers. Each one of us was unceremoniously dropped on this big blue spinning rock without a handbook or any tangible of idea of what in the hell we're doing here or what are we supposed to do. Existential angst, it is inherently painful, as God does not see it fit to send either syllabus or progress reports. We also don't ever really know how we're doing. It's all guesswork. And this brings me to the term grateful alcoholic. In the early days of my recovery, I would hear old-timers call themselves that and find myself utterly dumbstruck by the term. Grateful alcoholic? I thought, who in the hell would be grateful to be an alcoholic? Step 12 is the path to a firm understanding of this term and the implementation of it into my own life. Step 12 provided me the answer to my existential angst, a primary purpose. Step 12 answers the question, why am I here and what should I be doing? Actually, the big question is, where did I come from? Why am I here and where am I going?
Yes.
That's the question. She is my best friend. We have been together for a decade and a half, and I adore her more with each passing day. I think that I'm a pretty good husband, but how would I really know? I don't know exactly what a good husband is. And so my marriage is peppered with doubt. I have two little girls, 5 and 8. I'm a stay-at-home daddy. I am bananas about these two little miracles, and my every wish is to give them all that they need. I think that I'm a pretty good daddy, but I don't really know exactly what a good daddy is. So my fathering is peppered with uncertainty. This is true of my clients, my friends, my extended family, etc. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, I know exactly what a good sponsor is and what a good sponsor does. I have a basic text which lays the path out for me plain as day. I can sit in front of a newcomer with the book open and not shy of ambiguity and positively proclaim, if you do this work honestly and thoroughly as it's laid out in this book and then turn around and carry this message to others, you will recover and stay recovered. That's a piece of truth I can tangibly hold in my hand. That's what being an alcoholic brought me, and I do not believe that there was any way here without the illness. And so I'm grateful to be an alcoholic. How many people do you know who have a primary purpose? I like to call it the primary porpoise. That's one of my home groups, is the primary purpose group.
You got to watch out for the killer whale.
I was at birthday night last May, and I got one of the chips I received was at the purpose, and they had balloons. And one of the balloons that they had was a porpoise balloon. So nobody got it. So I stood up and I grabbed the balloon and said, I love being here at the primary porpoise. I got a good laugh. Yeah, nobody. It's one of those things that it's there, but nobody sees until somebody tells them.
Yes.
Let's see. That's a piece of
like. Do you feel like sharing the phone number?
Oh, yeah, let's do that. Okay. All right. Oh, that's right. What's the host call in is 949-534. Oh, no, wait a minute. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, okay, the guest call in.
That's right. It's not the host call in, it's the guest call in. We invite you folks to call in if you'd like to comment or ask a question. And it's 949-524.
No, 534.
534. Oops, sorry. Go ahead, Joseph.
949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. I think my eyes are going a little blurry here. I couldn't see the date or anything today. I don't know. I must be on the computer too long. That's a piece of truth I can tangibly hold in my hand. That's what being an alcoholic brought me, and I do not believe that there is any other way without the illness. And so I'm grateful to be an alcoholic. How many people do you know have a primary purpose? It is a
I think the same thing. A lot of people are walking down the street, and they have no idea what their problem is or what the solution is. And I and my fellow recovering people feel very fortunate most of the time that we do know what our problem is, but more importantly, we know what the solution is also. And I, too, am a grateful recovered alcoholic. Joseph?
Thanks, Harold. It's hard for most of us to come to that agreement. You'll hear that early on. And just to say that you're not – there's something magical about saying you're an alcoholic, especially the very first time. It stuck in my throat the first time I said that. I'm an But there's something magical about it when you finally acknowledge to your innermost self that you are an alcoholic and that your life has become unmanageable. Otherwise, I have no problem. I have no stinking problem. What I have is no stinking solution. Until I have a problem, there's no solution available to me. It is a magnificent gift which allows me to be far more effective and competent in my confusing, doubt-filled existence. The primary purpose is what it's all about, and without its employment, long-term recovery is all but impossible. We have a thing called the traditions. These are agreements that hold the groups and clubs in accountability of procedure and action. My understanding of all the traditions has to answer just one question. Isn't that good? Just build it down to one question. Does it divert us from our primary purpose, or does it enhance it? That's the only question that needs to be answered by any of the traditions. What do you think, Harold?
Well, I'm with you 100%. That is the thing. I work with a lot of doctors on a weekly basis, and they're all in agreement that if we don't have the right diagnosis, we really can't agree on the correct treatment. So we need that diagnosis, and that begins to open the door for things to get better if the diagnosis is correct. I was reading the traditions and was especially interested in traditions 2 and 3. And I just wanted to take a second, and the conversation you and I had earlier, Joseph, really this clarifies it beautifully. Tradition 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Group conscience. Our leaders are but servants, trusted servants. They do not govern. And that really gets at the heart of the stress that we've been talking about for a month now. They are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Every once in a while, Joseph and I come across someone who how can I put it, is it a little too big for their britches? And so it's happened again, and I've been around over 24 years, and I've seen some things change, sadly, in Alcoholics Anonymous, and this program is dedicated to getting back to basics. What I've seen change is that people these days don't seem to want to work with other alcoholics nearly as much as Dr. Bob and Bill W. did in the beginning, or people did 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And so I want to do what I can to help encourage others to work with others, encourage people to work with others, work with others. And that means we need to be trusted servants. That means that we must stay away from governing. We don't govern. And most of all, that means that we have to trust a loving God for his guidance moment by moment and stay away from governing. One of the first things that I learned in this program from my first sponsor, Big Paul, was the fact that there is a God and I'm not it. There is a God and I'm not it. And I think part of the Southwest Houston community of recovering people has forgotten that a little bit. Guys, you've forgotten that a little bit. Hello. There is a God and you're not it. So what I'm used to seeing is that when there's a difficulty, we pull people in closer. We don't push them away. So that's all I'm going to say about that right now. And then tradition three speaks to it directly. It nails it on the head as it says, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover, nor ought AA membership to ever depend upon money or conformity. Hello? Conformity. Never depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. So with tradition two outlining that people are not to govern, and with tradition three saying that hence we may refuse none who wish to recover, it just grieves my heart to see some of the ego escapades that are occurring in the AA community in Southwest Houston. I'm embarrassed about it. I'm embarrassed that it's part of what's happening in AA, and I'm striving to get back to basics. Hello, guys. We've got these traditions. We've got to adhere to these. So I'll get off my little soapbox. You know, back to basics. That's what we're here for tonight. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. No erring member can be, no board of directors can cast an erring member out into outer darkness. To cast someone out of AA could be a death sentence. That's not our goal. That's not our business. But having said that, we've gone a little afield. Let's get back to the step. The steps have the answer to the individual. The traditions have the answers for the groups. Chapter 7 wastes no time in dictating the absolute necessity of employing this step in our process of maintenance and growth. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with another alcoholic. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry the message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. They are very.
That is the most beautiful part of this is that, ladies and gentlemen out there in our listening audience, there are people that you connect with that no one else on earth can reach the way you reach them. The way you see the world is unique to you. And as you and I talk about how we see the world, your seeing grows and my seeing grows. And as our awarenesses grow, it's a beautiful thing. Joseph?
Thanks, Daryl. Sponsorship really is the key to this thing. Bill W. said, the difference between good sponsorship can make the difference of life and death. That's a quote from Bill W. There's always been one of the groups I went to when we talk about sponsorship, this one fellow would say, well, and he had 20-something years, he said, I was taught that as long as I didn't drink with my sponsee, I was a good sponsor.
Oh, man.
And then he would – he's a very funny guy, and people would take that because he was a known entity, you know, somewhat of a celebrity. Wrote books and does motivational speaking and all this, and from a very wealthy family. So he had credibility of understanding and education and accomplishment. And he would always end up with, I've never had a sponsee stay sober. So finally we're in a meeting, and he said that, and I called him on it right there. I says, can you hear yourself talk? Nobody stayed sober. Do you think there might be a problem with that attitude? And he turned around to me after the meeting. He says, you're getting too big for your britches.
Yeah, don't tell me anything I don't want to hear.
Yeah, I get a laugh when I say that, so hey, just leave me alone. I'm good. I got $1 million in my pocket, and I'm golden. So I could shoot from the hip. I don't care if anybody dies or lives. I'm good. There are very few exclamation points in the big book. When one of them shows up, it is a clear message to listen closely and understand this is a critical piece of the equation. Carrying the message to others who suffer as we had is by far the number one way to see them back up, drink again. It works when other activities fail. So, when meetings fail and calling your sponsor fails and reading the literature fails and writing gratitude list fails and prayer fails and meditation fails, working with another alcoholic won't. Going back to our real purpose on page 77, here it is. Maximum service to God and the people about us is the prime task of this whole deal. Without engaging this work, our recovery will surely be built on shifting sands. I'll add this, too. It's from the 12 and 12. And I believe this 12 and 12 is the second witness. It's the mouth of the second witness that establishes the big book. In the mouth of the second witness, the matter shall be established. And in the 12 and 12, it says, until we've spoken with complete candor to someone, if we still didn't belong. Step 5 was the answer. It was the beginning of true kinship between God and man. So it's saying not only do we have to speak a fifth step, we have to hear a fifth step. Who hears a fifth step? A sponsor.
The sponsor.
So until
I must admit, you have aggravated many people with this idea, but I agree with you 100%. This is key. And we've got to speak a fifth step. We've got to hear a fifth step. Intensive work with another alcoholic succeeds, and that is that. This is a life and death struggle. We need to understand that this is a deadly disease we're fighting. This is a war. Joseph?
Yeah, thanks, Harold. So until we've heard a fifth step as a sponsor, we still didn't belong. So that means you're still circling the field, waiting to run out of spiritual gasoline, and then it's another crash and burn. Then I'll have people come up to me afterwards. I don't agree with that. I says, look, I didn't write it. It's in the 12 and 12. This is the experience of hundreds, if not thousands, of recovered alcoholics. This is their experience. That's what the 12 and 12 is. It's a book of experiences. And I find this to be true. Well, I can't really sponsor somebody. Why not? Well, I don't know really how. Okay, well, let's go over it. Let's come up with something to show you how to sponsor somebody. Not every sponsor is going to do the same thing. And this is why Rum Radio came into being. I realized that sponsorship was everybody was shooting from the hip. You sponsored the way your sponsor sponsored you, the way his sponsor sponsored him. It was a verbal tradition of the most important aspect of the program. And I said, well, there's no written material on this, but the word sponsor doesn't come in any of the texts. The GSO puts out a pamphlet, and they change it every so often. They keep changing it up, so evidently they don't have it really quite correct yet either, what a sponsor does, doesn't do, and it's just very cursory, very basic understandings, and some of it I don't even agree with. I'll say you should be sober a year before you sponsor somebody. Where did that come from?
That's no bad idea.
That's a bad idea. That comes right from the GSO. That's what you know. That's what people got together and said. Yeah, well, this is the way we do it now, and that comes right. That's directly from the rehabs. That come right from the rehabs have no financial benefit for you to get sober right away. Cash cow. Now, some people had to go to rehab, and I have no knowledge of it personally. I had a daughter that went to three times she went to rehab. She ended up dying. And I've had friends that have gone to rehab many, many times. Eventually, they did get sober. Okay, so I can't say one way or the other, but it's not to their financial benefit for you to walk in, get sober, and then never come back again.
And let's add right at this point that the material we're reading from is stuff that Michael wrote, and his idea is that we can take someone through the 12 steps in 24 hours. It is possible, and he recommends it, and that is the basis of what we're sharing, how to really get through these steps in a timely manner. We give up some thoroughness to go for speed, but I agree with you. There can be many advantages to getting through the steps quickly, and certainly not wait a year to begin to sponsor. Joseph?
Matter of fact, that year understanding in some club and one group or club in New Jersey, I had a sponsee from then. I talk about him all the time. Dan, his group was. You had to go to meetings for a year before you could work the steps.
Wow.
And then they didn't even have, it wasn't even, from what I understood, and it was hard to believe, what they did was after the year of you go to the meetings, they would direct you to step studies to work the steps. I don't
get
it.
So let's get back to this material on how to get through these steps in 24 hours.
Without
I love it.
Okay, without engaging this work, our recovery will surely be built on shifting sands. Following this firm directive in the next paragraph, we will get the 12-step promises, which will show that the other this message to alcoholics is need. Life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. This message here is that the second best reason to take other AA members to the steps, in addition to keeping yourself alive and sober, it is because it is the greatest frigging feeling in the world. I wouldn't have put it quite that way, but it's really it is a good feeling. Now, not to be, humility is like underwear. It's essential unless it shows, and then it's indecent. We don't take credit for someone who gets sober, just like we don't take blame if somebody we're working with gets drunk. This is really what a sponsor does is direct the new person to God and to the group, and then ultimately to God. sponsor is a conduit to that arena. So, but when you see you put in there's a lot of effort. You know, I always take a gulp when I pick up a new sponsee. There's work ahead, and I'll tell my sponsee I'll put in as much work in his recovery as he is willing to do, but no more and no less. So if he's willing to go to any length, do the assignments, meet me on time, do all that, respect my time, my experience to help him, he's got my full attention. If he doesn't, I don't. I don't fire anybody. I don't believe in firing sponsees. They usually fire themselves. Some people have you as a sponsor just so they can say they have a sponsor. I can't play God. I used to try that. It doesn't work. I'm not good at it. It ruins my sobriety. My acceptance is in direct proportion to my serenity. So now what we do is now we have some kind of platform of understanding, and now we get them through in a thorough yet timely manner. I will sacrifice the thorough for timely every time. Getting them through the fifth step and a spiritual experience will work when other things don't work. And get them through six too quick. Once they're more than halfway through, my experience is they'll follow through. Because after step five, the pain is all gone. So you got to do six right away. Get them on six. Now they're halfway, more than halfway through. It's easier to go forward than to go backwards at that point. I will advocate this point all day long. You're going to feel good when you do it. On a personal note, I have lived my entire life, including my 20 years in recovery, with intense anxiety. Certainly, sobriety and medication have made it livable, but it's always there, except when I'm doing step work and with another alcoholic. Then it goes away. For the exact amount of time I'm sitting with the big book open in my lap, leading a prospect to a spiritual awakening is the exact amount of time that I'm able to locate every minute bit of angst inside my mind and heart. I never feel closer to the human being God put me on this earth to be than when I'm doing this work. It is the bright spot of my life. I believe what Michael's saying, and I might have chopped it up on the reading, when I'm in the service of my fellow beings, am I not in that service and in that moment? Am I not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that service and in that moment, is that not when I make my conscious contact with my Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead. Harold?
Yes. So I'm looking at our printed material from step 12 of the 12 and 24, and I'm trying to find where we are, because this next part coming up is so cool. It's so cool. He points out here what people say these days that is totally off, and then he outlines what he says to a new sponsee, and then he outlines what the verbal tradition has become, and it's totally off the mark. And I just can't wait for us to read that part. Are you on the same page?
Well, I'm in terms of the work itself, if you find that. It's right under, it is the bright spot of my life, and then the next paragraph. In terms of the work itself, they can now carefully break down the process of properly carrying the message in a manner so specific that it's truly mind-blowing how bastardized the process has become. First, on page 90, they let know that the only alcoholic worth trying to save is an alcoholic who's actually ready to be saved. When you discover a person, find out all you can about him. If he does not want to stop drinking, Don't waste time trying to persuade him. You may spoil a later opportunity. Did you find that, Harold?
Yes, I'm with you.
Okay. We don't proselytize in Alcoholics Anonymous. It is not our job to convince anyone who doesn't know if they're an alcoholic that they are alcoholic, nor is it our job to convince those who understand themselves to be alcoholic that they need to stop. Quite the contrary, as soon as we locate that the person in front of us is not ready to cease using and do the work, we are to cast them aside and move on. If we don't push now, they may come looking for us down the road when their actual bottom arrives. Next, on the following page, they broach a situation where the man is, in fact, ready at least to take our way of life. See your man alone, if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. How's the weather? After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you. Being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. My experience is people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Harold?
Yes, I agree. Let's keep going here.
Let's say that I was out mowing my lawn and my neighbor came walking over to speak with me and asked, "Hey, hum, you go to those AA meetings, right?" I answered, "Yes, I do." "Why do you ask?" He then states, "Well, I'm not saying that I need that or anything. It's just my drinking has been kind of heavier lately and don't know. I just thought we could talk." If my next words are, "Oh, yeah? Well, what's been happening? Tell me about it." We're going to get nowhere. The main thing we know as alcoholics is that lying, manipulation, and deflection are our best tools, and we are not going to give up the truth to a person just because they've asked. On the other hand, if I was to say, "You know what? I'll brew some coffee. I'll tell you what brought me to AA, and you can see if it makes any sense to you." We know that if he is a real alcoholic, he will hear something in my story which allows him to see that we are the same. He will identify into the process, and then he will start talking. It's sort of like fishing. If you wish to catch some fish, you're not going to go down to the end of the dock and attempt to beat fish over the head with a hammer. You're going to cast your line and wait patiently until they take the bait. We don't scream to the masses. We whisper to the individuals. Well, we're screaming to the masses tonight, guys, so you listen. Listen up. Harold?
No, we're not. That's what I really enjoy about this is that for all of you listening, Joseph and I have a lot of conversations, and what I like about it is that neither of us beats the other over the head with anything. We do share about what we've experienced, and then some of it makes sense and right now, and some of it makes sense later, and some of it doesn't seem to make much sense, but that doesn't bother us. We're interested in sharing with each other and with you. If you're listening, you're welcome to join in also, or you're welcome just to listen. So this is great material. It's from the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and so keep in mind, we're not making this up. This isn't our unique experience. This is the stuff written in 1935 that's worked for millions of people. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Now, on page 94, we come to our sponsorship directives. This is the most important and useful page in the entire chapter. It breaks down exactly what it is we need to make clear to a person who has asked for our help and in advance of starting to work. Basically, what we're doing with this is we're qualifying the prospect. Prospect is a sales term, a potential customer. And you qualify the customer some way. Does he have the finances? Is he ready to buy? What will take him to buy? How does he relate to you? When I was selling sometimes, I would be so interested in the person, about them, because people like to talk about themselves. I know I do. If you want to get somebody's attention, you have them talk, and he'll tell you, if you get him talking long enough, he'll tell you exactly what it's going to take to close the deal. Outline the program of action, explaining how to make a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you're now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important to him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. That's always the question. What's in it for you? Why are you taking the time? Why are you doing this? Don't you have anything better to do? What do you care about me? Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain. He is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Passing it on. My sponsors always know, well, you know, you've done so much. What can I do for you? There's only one thing. We don't take cash, checks, or credit cards. The only thing you can do for me is now you pass it on, and that's how you pay me back. There could be no other way. Suggest how important it is that he places the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Oh, man. Self-centered. Prideful. Now I got to think of somebody else more than me? Well, that's enough about me. Would someone else like to talk about me? That's tough. That goes against the human condition. Natural man has been an enemy to God and has been since the fall. And the winter doesn't look much better. But the spring comes with the promise of the resurrection and renewal. And by summertime, the cotton will be high and the catfish, they'll be a-jumping. So this is the beginning of it. You're dealing with the natural man, and the alcoholic is the extreme example. And so it takes time. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. Remember, while you were talking to him, you weren't drinking. Matter of fact, you weren't even thinking about drinking.
These three sentences really summarize the entire work that we've spent months on here and that Joseph's website is devoted to. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him.
Amen.
And that four sentences really summarizes the whole idea. And especially the middle of it, which you remarked about, suggests how important it is that he placed the welfare of other people ahead of his own. We have a focus at our church right now on the Sunday message series that is called I Am Third, and it's all about people placing God first, other people second, and themselves third. And I was thinking, wow, this is good recovery also. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. It would be an honor to help you, so let me be clear about how this is going to work. We will sit down right now, if you'd like, and go through the first three steps. This will allow you to gather the information explaining what is wrong with you, what the solution is to what's wrong with you, and how to make an affirmative declaration that you're ready to do whatever it takes to bring the solution to light. Then you will make a comprehensive list of what's blocking you from God. To go back to number three, what he's stating, I believe you can do the first three steps. Sitting at a traffic light. As long as you're not sitting in a traffic light in New York City. You know why, Harold?
They're long.
No, actually, the New York minute is made up of the annoyed nanosecond. Then you will make a comprehensive list of what's blocking you from God. We'll go through that list and come to see what you've been, the pattern of your failures. You'll become ready to have these things taken from you, and then you will ask to have them removed. After that, you'll make a list of those whom you have harmed and begin the process of making proper amends. At this point, you will spiritually awaken, and we will institute the final three steps into your life as a design for living, allowing you to maintenance and grow the recovery that you have granted. Now, that's the maintenance. I like to grow better. Nothing maintains itself. You're either growing spiritually, your recovery, if not your sobriety, becomes tentative. I like to think of 10 and 11 and 12 as the spiritual growth steps. I want you to know this work I will do with you is work that I have done myself, and the exact helping you is a necessity to hold on to my own recovery. My hope is that you will turn around and do the same with others that I am doing with you. With that said, it is my job to tell you what to do or not to do. It's not my job. I don't tell my sponsors any of that. If they ask me for advice, I tell them I advise people never to give advice, and people who give advice usually are the ones who need it the most. On the website, though, I do direct them to Decision Making for Dummies and give them a spiritual idea of how to make a decision on their own. All I can do is make a suggestion, which is a subtle command. It's like having a ripcord in your hand, and you just jump that in. Your sponsor is giving you a suggestion to pull that ripcord. But, my friend, that decision is still yours, not your sponsor's. Alas. Also, if any point you'd like to discontinue your work, that is absolutely fine. Just let me know. My experience is if when the sponsee doesn't want to do it anymore, he's not going to call you and say, well, I've decided not to do it. You're just not going to hear from him. It's like a bad date. It's like a date that went wrong. They're figuring that, well, if I don't call him, he'll get the message that I'm not interested. So if he had that much recovery where he would call you and discuss it with you, he wouldn't need you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's my experience also. You're not going to get a call that says, no thanks anymore.
You know, you've done a really good job. Yeah, and I've learned a lot from you. But I thank you for your time and your patience. And, you know, I appreciate your time. You're not going to get that. That's not going to happen. Not in this life. About a week later, you're going to go, well, I wonder where he went to. Usually what I'll do is I'll make one or two attempts, no more than that. Call up just to let them know, hey, I'm still here, you're okay, I'm concerned. Maybe the second call, no more than that. And the reason why we don't chase them, big mistake, because we avoid what pursues us. If you pursue your sponsee who doesn't want to be bothered, you're just driving them further into the woods. Maybe he needs another sponsor, whatever. You know, it's not program, but you hope that you make things available to him, and that's it, and then you let him go. He either comes back or he doesn't. But the nice thing about going through the steps quickly, it goes like this. Life's blood, the newcomer's life's blood to AA. Just like the old-timer's the backbone. But relapse is the soul. Because there's nothing more tormented than a head full of AA and a belly full of booze. So the more steps you can get into your prospect as quickly as possible, and thorough if you can, you know, you try to do the balance that out, but quickly, because the more you put it into him, he'll never drink again with impunity. And sometimes that's the best you're going to get.
We got 20 seconds.
Well, what we could go over. We could close. We need to close it out for WNAH in Nashville because they shut down on the hour. So
rumradio.org. So we'll see you on the radio.
Yeah, we could continue on and finish this up if you'd like, or we could do another part.
Well, I don't know. Let's see. We've been on an hour.
Yes.
I see. Okay, we've got another 30 minutes?
Yes.
Excellent, okay. Because I really wanted to get into this next section, which is what not to say. Can I read that part?
Sure, go right ahead. Well,
who are unaware of this information would be willing to be honest about their inability to properly serve, while it might cause some inconvenience for the newcomer, at least he would get the message that he needs to look elsewhere for the help he desires.
I think you might be on the wrong... are you now those in the program who are unaware?
Right below where you just let me know, and
okay.
We said, well, he probably won't let me know.
Okay,
but
now
we're... What can go wrong?
Okay, go ahead.
Unfortunately, our fellowship is loaded with thousands who will happily take on the role of sponsor and then not only fail to deliver the information on page 94, but, in fact, deliver an entirely different package of information which often sounds something like this. Now, this is a verbal tradition that does not appear in the book, and it's not helpful. Here we go, folks. Sure, I'll sponsor you. Here's my number. Call me every day. You'll need to do 90 meetings in 90 days because meeting makers make it. Don't drink no matter what. But if you're thinking about drinking, think the thought all the way through. Remember, your last drink, and call me before you do it. You are not allowed to have sex or make any major decisions for a year. Make sure to avoid people, places, and things. Other than that, take what you want and leave the rest, and bear in mind, it is a selfish program. At some point down the road, we'll talk about taking a look at the steps. So, to our listeners, I want to say none of that is in the book, and all of that is dangerous and destructive. It doesn't say you are not allowed to have sex or make any decisions for a year. That's not part of the book. It doesn't say if you're thinking about drinking, take the thought all the way through and remember your last drink and call me before you do it. First of all, I've never had anyone call me before they drank.
Never.
Doesn't help. It's a waste of breath. They don't have to call me every day. I've never had anyone call me every day. You'll need to do 90 meetings in 90 days because meeting makers make it. It's not enough just to go to meetings, and it's not enough just to stay sober. Let's see, don't drink no matter what. If you're not allowed to have sex, make sure to avoid people, places, and things. How the heck are you going to do that? You've got to be around people. You've got to go to places, and life is full of lots of things. You can't avoid all that. Other than that, take what you want and leave the rest. Oh, great. And bear in mind, it's a selfish program. What we're trying to do is get over our selfishness. We're trying to think of others before we think of ourselves. We're trying to give back. It's not a selfish program. It's a program of humility and learning and service to other alcoholics. And at some point down the road, we'll talk about looking at the steps. So those are the things that have crept in to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous somehow, and they are bunk. They are bunk. They don't work, and people get killed going along these lines. We need to get back to basics and back to the book. So you want to take it from there, Joseph?
Okay. Would you leave off? Look at the
Not
steps.
One word of that diatribe is true to the original design of our program. It is all based on behavior control, which has no history of being an effective road for a true alcoholic to get or stay recovered. Our third step makes it absolutely, abundantly clear to us that our addiction has brought us to a fork in the road. There are two paths, only two. We can have an alcoholic death or a spiritual awakening. The third option of mitigating our behavior or our circumstances is no longer on the table. That ship has sailed. And to tell a newcomer that such a choice exists is an act of abuse. On page 96, they speak to us about the prospect who is able to go so far as to ask for the help and begin the process, but in short order demonstrates an unwillingness to actually do the work necessary for successful completion of the process. Quote, do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. Joseph?
Yeah, thank you, Harold. Absolutely. There's a tendency in the program, the way it is today, to chase. A lot of people know that to maintain or to grow in their recovery program, they need to sponsor, right? Fifth step, until they've spoken with complete candor, they need to sponsor someone. Newcomer comes in, they flock around them, they give them their number. Now, of course, hopefully, if you spoke in the meeting, then you have a little bit heads up. They've heard they heard you said something that resonated with them, or firm handshake. You owned AT&T. There was something that drew him to you, spiritual connection. If you didn't speak in the meeting, how would they supposed to know? By sense of smell? The big book actually tells us, go find a prospect and work with him.
Yes, that's it. That's the key. Go find a prospect and work with him. And I needed to hear this weekend, the paragraph, don't be discouraged if your prospect does not respond. Search out another alcoholic and try again. I've had some disappointment this week, and I was thinking, wow. But it's exactly true. He doesn't want to work with me, so I'm going to shake the dust from my sandals and go find someone who will work with me. No big deal, really. And if I leave him alone, he may come to a realization later, he may not. But if I press and press and press, even when he is ready, he'll have a sour taste in his mouth. So I appreciate us going over this weekend, and a little reminder for me. Go ahead.
What I do, what I've learned to do, and it's something, from my experience, I got 15 and a half years. I was at the Lake Lakewood Conference one year. I was running out of the hurricane belt here. There was a hurricane going on, and there happened to be a prospect that weekend, so I had a place to stay. And I got out of town just at the crack, when you weren't supposed to get in the car because it was too dangerous. That's when I left, because I figured nobody else would be on the road, and I was right. And I basically sailed to Lakewood, and there was an Al-Anon, and she said that she had raised her hands in meetings for years, and no one ever asked for her to be her sponsor, for them to be her sponsor. So eventually she took the bull by the horns, and after the meeting, when there was a newcomer, she'd go up to the lady and go, "Hi, my name is Jane. I'm your new sponsor." And she said it worked very well, because the newcomer really doesn't know what the protocol is, what the procedure is, let alone the jargon. And it worked really well, and she sponsored a lot of ladies that way. And I said, you know, that's a great idea. I'm not that, I don't do that exactly, but something similar. I qualify the prospect. After the meeting, before we circle up, if I'm looking for a sponsee, I go hold hands with the guy. So when we're circling up to say the Lord's Prayer or whatever the benediction is that they decided to do, I've already got him by the hand. Right after we say the prayer, I turn around to him and I go, "Have you had enough? Yes or no?" Because what do you mean? Have you had enough humiliation? Have you had enough pain? Have you had enough? Yeah, I've had enough. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? Yes. You can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. I carry Clancy's 7 questions with me when I'm looking, and I give it to him. You know what luck is? Luck is when preparation meets opportunity. I'm prepared. The opportunity will appear. I give him Clancy's 7 questions. The first thing I need you to do is answer these 7 questions, and I need him back tomorrow. Here's my number. I expect your call. I'm done. Agreed to the first 2 propositions, and he's got a list of a simple assignment, a basic instruction, and soon as he's ready to go. If I get the call the next day, it's either I get the call the next day and he's done the work, or I don't hear from him. So 2 things. He's either not ready or he's not ready for me. In any event, it's okay. I just move on to the next guy. I don't make the phone calls. I don't wonder where he's at. I don't try to engage him in meetings. We're done. Harold?
Yes, I like that approach. I also like the lady's approach. "Hi, I'm your new sponsor. Here are Clancy's questions. Call me tomorrow." They don't know what the protocol is, and often that makes it easy for me and them. Sometimes it doesn't work. Here it says most of them don't make it. That is not because of some arbitrary statistics delineating that only so many out of so many will get and stay sober. AA is not a lottery. Those who do the work recover, and those who don't, don't. The only statistic which matters is the one that tells us that 100% of the people who do the work out of the book, as it is laid out, with the sponsor, recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Let me repeat that. 100% of the people who do the work out of the book, as it's laid out, with a sponsor, recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Unfortunately, the majority won't follow it all the way through. If you are following the directions in the book, this is not a statement about your competence as a sponsor. It is a statement they have more research to do. Let's see. What did it say?
Remember.
Unfortunately, the majority won't follow it all the way through. If you are following the directions in the book, this is not a statement about your competence as a sponsor. It's a statement they have more research to do. And that's a word I haven't used in some time, but I do agree completely. I've called it research in the past. The idea that we can drink like normal people, that idea has to be smashed. And some people hang on to that old idea, and it really kills. So I've had people who need to go back out, try drinking this way or that way, try to control it. They need to do a little more research and to be fully convinced that they just cannot drink. It's called research. It seems very risky, but sometimes that is the piece of the puzzle that's needed. Joseph?
Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. They're those that will not or cannot give themselves to this simple program. There are such unfortunates. They seem to have been born that way. There are those, too, who suffer from grave mental and emotional disorders, and they too can get well if they have the capacity to be honest. Rarely have we seen a person succeed who insists on following their own path. They just seem to be born that way. Remember, the 12-step reads, try to carry the message. How or if the message is received is really none of our business. I know for myself I can only work with so many people at a time. Therefore, I want them all to be people who are really working. To keep spending time with someone who is clearly bullshitting me half the time and constantly making excuses, boy, that puts somebody in mind, doesn't it? For why they aren't doing the work is a waste of my time and theirs. But for more importantly, it's keeping me from working with someone who's actually ready to face their fears and recover.
That's it in a nutshell. Working with someone who doesn't want to face their fears is keeping me from working with someone who is willing to face their fear. On page 98, the book also covers the issue of working with a prospect who is prone to consistently tell you that his family, his job, or some other pressing engagement is keeping him from doing his work. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Joseph?
I'd like to put it to you this way. We share at our meetings and our sponsorship experience, strength, and hope. Experience is an inventory of our past mistakes. That's how we relate to each other. Strength is the ability to lift or carry. We lift our fellows and we carry the message that keeps us sober. And hope is the belief that our lives will continue to improve when we do the next right thing. And that next right thing is not to take that first drink of alcohol. To clean house is suggested in the outline of the 12 steps found in our basic text, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, to trust in God and the process he gave us. Harold?
Yes. It goes on to say, it doesn't say suggest this idea or offer this idea. It says burn the idea into the consciousness. That's pretty weighty language. The message that whatever the prospect puts in front of his sobriety will surely be lost is being driven home with such intensity as a result of the experiences our pioneers had in the years before this book was written. The Big Book is not a theoretical book. It is an experiential book. They are not telling you what they think. They are telling you what they have watched. In those first 5 years, they had obviously seen many alcoholics give some exterior element of their lives priority over the step work and fall as a result of that choice. Their hope is that in instituting these warnings, our road to salvation might have fewer potholes than many of theirs. Shifting back for a moment to the above paragraph, speaking to the behavior control, we get a passage on page 100, continuing on to 101, regarding the fallacy of people, places, and things posing a danger to alcoholics. Do you want to read that part, Joseph?
Sure. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things too. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. Moving pictures. I guess they didn't have DVD at the time. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go into their houses. We mustn't think to be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. It ain't necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. I had a lady one time, she didn't like rum radio. You know why, Harold? Because of the word rum. She couldn't find anything else wrong with it other than it was rum. When I explained to her, she says, it's a trigger. Couldn't you come up with a different name? I says, lady, if that's a trigger, don't read the dictionary.
There you go.
People seem to be, when I tell them that it's from the third, one of the stories in the third edition of the big book, Rum, Radio, and Rebellion, now it's not a trigger because it was already in the big book. It's not the words. That's the other problem I have with rehabs is that you're in a sequestered environment. So you can't get any booze. You can't get any drugs. You're there. They're going to go the brainwash. So you're going to get brainwashed in the rehab, and then it's dry cleaning at AA. So
they've improved on that a little bit. A lot of the rehabs, people sneak drugs and alcohol in all the time. So that's a relief.
Well, see, and the problem is, okay, now they let up this pent-up demand. It's an economics. So if you still haven't gotten it, and now there's a pent-up demand to get high because you've been denied so long, now because now you're cured, you can handle it, and now there's a pent-up demand, and you're back in the world again. AA, you work it in the world, and that's where you live, kiddo. You don't live behind walls. You live where every corner there's a 7-Eleven or there's there's beer, alcohol. No matter what, you can't go to the store. You can't see a billboard. It's all over the place. Get used to it. You don't have to buy into it. We recoil from it like it from a hot flame. Not cocky. Just it's not there anymore for us. I don't consider it, but I always have to be on the guard that if I'm powerless against that first drink of alcohol. Harold?
Absolutely. I was walking down the beer aisle. I usually avoid the beer aisle. Actually, it wasn't the beer aisle. It was an end cap where they were offering a great price on Busch beer here at Kroger's in Houston. And it's amazing how the beer has ventriloquist capabilities. And it was saying, you should buy, look at this price. I've taught myself to talk back to it and say, no way. So here we are. Previous to awakening, the idea of avoiding certain temptations makes sense as you are still essentially running on willpower. But once recovered, which I think we now see is meant to happen very rapidly, these things ought to be no impediment whatsoever. If a guy calls me and tells me that he was at a concert the night before and found himself staring at the beer taps and drooling drooling and hypothesizes that going to the club was clearly a mistake, I will let him know that the problem isn't the club. The problem is that he isn't spiritually fit. And the message of the big book is not and has never been that if you are not spiritually fit, you should be extra cautious where you go and who you spend time with. The message of the big book is that if you are not spiritually fit, then get spiritually fit. Farther down the page, they hit this point yet again. Quote, in our belief, any scheme of combating alcoholism which proposes to shield the sick man from temptations is doomed to failure. If the alcoholic tries to shield himself, he may succeed for a time, but he usually winds up with a bigger explosion than ever. We have tried these methods. These attempts to do the impossible have always failed. End quote. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Yeah, we've tried. People have been trying it for years. It's been the temperance movement. What was it? The Johnson Act. What was it? Prohibition. It doesn't work. The war on drugs doesn't work because it's a war. You have to get them to the information. That's the only thing that really works. You have to come into the spirit. Drugs and alcohol, I believe, Dr. Young called it, alcohol was a lower form of spirituality, in so many words. We're looking for a spiritual connection, and the alcohol and drugs are the easy way out. Because it takes work to get true spiritual. You got to read scriptures. You got to do work for you. You got to be charitable. That all takes a lot of getting out of self. And like I said, natural man is an enemy to God. It has been so since the fall. And the winter doesn't look much better. So these are not natural acts that we're expected to do. And for an alcoholic who is the extreme example of self-will run riot, it's near impossible without the big book. The big book is a spiritual work given to us by a loving God. I would tell people this. I try to get AA into my church. They have their own 12-step program. And I always tell them this. They don't like to hear from me, like a lot of people in and out of church, because I hit too many nerves. If the 12 steps are not a gift from God, why have you adopted them? And if they are a gift from God, why do you feel compelled to change them? I never get an answer, because there is no answer to that. It works just fine when it's worked correctly. Harold?
Well, I look at your website and really appreciate the fact that you have a focus on the intensive work with other alcoholics, a focus on finding a sponsor, on helping people find sponsees. And these are improvements and additions to the 12 steps. We're not really changing it. We're focusing on it. But the same comment can be made for some of the churches that have adapted the steps and made them more pointed and more focused in their way. And so I think, like the Grapevine has done, there's a focus there. Rum Radio has a focus. Celebrate Recovery has a focus and I think has a place and a purpose. Now, when I first got sober, I wouldn't have had much use for Celebrate Recovery or many of the other church movements. But I'm at a place now where it's very valuable. I'm grateful to AA. I'm also grateful to Rum Radio, and I'm grateful to Celebrate Recovery. Joseph?
Yeah, thanks, Harold. Well, we're down to the last few. It's been a long. I know there was a long. There's even a little bit more. Basically, what AA's telling us, what the big book tells us, turn our thoughts to someone we can help. That's the main focus of step 12. turn your thoughts to someone you can help. And when you do that, you become of maximum service to God and your fellows. So we'll see you on the radio. Thanks, Harold. We'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Talk
God
to you
bless.
Tomorrow. Bye.
Okay.